Case number 19-4039, DaVita Incorporated et al. v. Marietta Memorial Hospital Employee Health Benefit Plan et al. Or arguments not to exceed 15 minutes for plaintiffs, 15 minutes to be shared by defendants. Mr. Bobby Roy Birchfield for the appellants.
You may proceed.
Morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Bobby Birchfield for DaVita and DVA Renal. In 1972, Congress recognized that dialysis is a life-saving procedure essential to care of patients with end-stage renal disease. Accordingly, because of the staggering cost of dialysis, it added ESRD patients to Medicare so that almost all of them were covered by Medicare. Private payers responded by pushing ESRD patients from Medicare, from their private plans onto Medicare. That was one of the reasons Congress adopted the Medicare Secondary Payer Act in 1981. That act deems the private payers the primary payer for the first 30 months of a patient's eligibility for Medicare. Congress has continued to refine the Medicare Secondary Payer Act over the last 40 years to take account of various schemes by providers to avoid their obligations. In this case, the complaint alleges that defendants, knowing that ESRD patients account for virtually all the cost of dialysis, singled out outpatient dialysis and only outpatient dialysis by removing it from their network, slashing reimbursement to a rate below Medicare, and subjecting them to extensive audits. Only dialysis patients like patient A, who have no network option, are personally liable for unpaid balances. This structure encourages ESRD patients to leave the plan early and join Medicare, which does not subject them to balance billing. And that's what patient A did.
Can I start with the private right of action and just ask, I know you say biomedical is distinguishable, or at least its statements are dicta, but it does have pretty definitive language. I can read a quote. Put differently, a primary plan is liable under the private cause of action when it discriminates against plan holders on the basis of their medical eligibility and therefore causes Medicare to step in and temporarily foot the bill. That suggests that it requires a Medicare payment, which I think is lacking here. So why should we not treat that as authoritative on the meaning of the private right of action?
Judge Murphy, good question. Let me note that the timer did not reset to 10 minutes when I began. So if I could, Mr. Mitchell, look at that. Judge Murphy, we believe, as you know, that biomedical language that you just read is dicta because there was already a payment by Medicare in that case. So the court did not need to address that issue. What the court was addressing in that issue very explicitly was whether demonstrated payment meant that there had to be a pre-existing judgment or other holding of liability against the plan for the private plan to bring a suit. I would ask, the court did not look at the language for the private action as we've asked this court to do.
Well, it did look at the language in the sense of it recognized that language was difficult to understand. And then it said, well, there's both a 1 and a 2A in the statutory text. Okay, 1 we know is take account or differentiate. 2A must be something different under the rules of statutory construction that against superfluity. It seemed to suggest that the 2A had added meaning because of the need for a Medicare payment. So,
Your Honor,
that's the type of interpretation it undertook.
Well, two points on that, Your Honor. Number one is the private cause of action, which is reprinted in the addendum to our brief at page 81, and I would invite the court to look at that. You will search that provision in vain for any indication that the payment by Medicare is necessary. In contrast, on page 80 of our brief, at the very bottom, is section B2, which is the action by the United States. And that action begins in order to recover payments made under this subchapter. So it clearly requires a government payment in that adjacent section.
Do you have a theory for Y2A? Do you have a theory for why 2A isn't superfluous under your view?
Well, Your Honor, what I would say is 2A prohibits Medicare from making a payment, especially here when the plan has made payments. So Medicare could not make a payment here. And it would be very odd for Congress to include in a provision that required a government payment a provision that prohibited the government from making a payment. So in our view, the court can interpret biomedical consistent with our view and reconcile the statute to it by holding that the phrase you referred to in biomedical was unnecessary dicta, and that the statute as written, plain language of the statute, does not require a private payment by Medicare in order to bring a private action.
But are you not reading to the reference to 2A out, then you're not, it says in accordance with paragraphs 1 and 2A, and your reading essentially says we don't care about 2A.
Well, Your Honor, I think you can read 2A into this statute. It's difficult to reconcile, I admit, but if you read 2A as I've suggested, which is to say the private right of action can exist if there is no payment by Medicare, a reasonable interpretation of these two statutes is the government can sue when it pays and private parties can sue when the plan does something that's discriminatory and the government doesn't pay, as has happened here. In a situation, Your Honor, in a situation where the plan explicitly discriminates against ESRD by paying $1 for dialysis coverage for ESRD patients and market rate for dialysis for non-ESRD patients, there would be no remedy, because the government can't step in and pay because the plan would have paid $1. And the private plan, and therefore the government has no action, and a private plan could not pay under that situation because the government hasn't paid. So there would be no remedy for even—
Would you, in that scenario, would you potentially have an ERISA cause of action?
Your Honor—
By which I mean the A2B for a claim for benefits, essentially the count 2 of your current complaint?
Your Honor, that is unclear based upon what the district court did with the ERISA provision.
But that's
by assignment, you could, but it would be odd. It would be odd to have to defer to ERISA for a remedy under the MSPA. Yes, Judge Moore.
But your count 2 is an ERISA claim based on the Secondary Payer Act, right?
That is correct. It's based on discrimination.
Because of the assignment by the patient A here.
Your Honor, our position would be that we do have a claim under the assignment. The district court disagreed with that. But again, I would come back to the point that it would be odd to have to defer to ERISA for a remedy under the MSPA when the MSPA does have a private right of action. The construction that the defendants in the district court are reading into the private action would render it essentially inoperative. I can't think of a situation where you would have a private cause of action under there. If I may turn to the violation, we reprint the two anti-discrimination provisions on page 79 of our addendum. The first one says may not take into account. We've alleged plausibly that the defendants actually did take into account the huge cost of ESRD patients in taking dialysis out of their plan or putting restrictions on their dialysis, and they cannot disguise that fact by including a minute number of persons who do not have ESRD within that restriction.
Can I ask you on the merits? It seems to me the hardest part for your case is the regulation, the uniform limitations on particular services regulation. It seems like under your theory of the case that it requires more than just equal treatment of end-stage renal disease patients and other patients in terms of it actually requires substantive provisions. I don't understand how that regulation at least would not be invalid under the statutory scheme? Because I would think that regulation would violate your view of the statute. I wonder if you could opine on that.
Your Honor, the Uniform Utilization Regulation doesn't really apply here, because here you have a limitation that applies from the very first dialysis treatment. That regulation.
Well, okay, but you agree, though, don't you, that it would have a disparate impact on end-stage renal disease patients because they have to have many more than 30 treatments a year?
Your Honor, I would tend to agree with that, but I don't think the court has to reach that here.
But doesn't that suggest that if we say that it's a disparate impact type analysis rather than just a facially discriminatory analysis, that this regulation is invalid?
Your Honor, I think if you look at the wording of the statute does indicate that not only discrimination against end-stage renal disease specifically, and like sickle cell anemia, as we say, dialysis is so closely associated with end-stage renal disease that we believe that singling it out affects ESRD patients. But you also have a prohibition on discrimination based upon the need for renal dialysis and the point you're making, any other grounds, which we believe requires a disparate impact analysis. So we're advocating that you look at the statute. I don't believe that regulation applies. And if that regulation did apply, I think your Honor's correct. It creates some issues for end-stage renal disease patients that you don't have to tackle in this case. I see my time.
Yes, thank you.
How much do we have to make your argument hinge on this conditional payment requirement into the private enforcement provision to decide whether your argument is meritorious?
Your Honor, thank you for that question. We've also alleged that the plan as structured forces patients onto Medicare, which is what happened to patient A. So Medicare has gone out of pocket for the last 16 months of the coordination period here. So that's our alternative position. But our primary position, as noted, is that the statute by its terms does not require a Medicare payment for the private action.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. I guess next is Mr. Holliday.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Rodney Holliday. I'm here today on behalf of Medical Benefits Administrators, Inc., which is named in the caption incorrectly as Medical Benefits Mutual Life Insurance Company. I'm here today for 12 minutes, and my co-counsel, Mr. Profiter, has reserved 3 minutes to speak on behalf of Appalese. MedBen is, of course, the third-party benefits administrator that administers claims for medical benefits providers submitting bills to the self-insured plan of Marietta Memorial Hospital. And make no mistake, this appeal by DaVita is not to shift money from that self-funded insured plan and others like it over to Medicare or over to patient A in this case or in this complaint. Instead, what DaVita is asking this court to do is to sanction, to create a decision that says it's illegal to pay anything less than the highest rate of coverage with the least amount of restrictions or conditions on any medical benefits claim where the patient is eligible for Medicare. In other words, if a medical plan provides a benefit at a highest tier rate or doesn't have conditions or restrictions, then that is going to have to apply to everyone who's Medicare eligible, or else it's different. And according to DaVita's theory, different equates to discrimination. Discrimination equates to illegal. Illegal equates to strike it out with the funds going to DaVita.
Can I start by asking essentially the same hypothetical that counsel did in responding to me on the private right of action, which is you say that there has to be a Medicare payment under biomedical, so the first issue. But what happens in the scenario in which there is blatant discrimination against end-stage renal disease patients, like that would patently violate the statute? Say it's just end-stage renal disease patients under the plan have to pay a whole bunch of more co-pays or something that would clearly violate the differentiate provision. Under your theory of the private right of action, there's nothing that patient could do to to bring suit because there would be no Medicare secondary payment because Medicare wouldn't pay because it's the secondary payment. I'd like to get your answer to that hypothetical. How would that patient bring suit?
I don't think, Your Honor, in that circumstance that the MSPA would apply. You know, the view would be that the biomedical decision is well-reasoned all the way to the end where it lays out how damages would be calculated, and those damages necessarily required a reimbursement by Medicare to constitute something to calculate from. And so I think the MSPA would not be a vehicle to bring a cause of action in that instance.
So how that is that, I was just going to ask, how would that patient remedy what would seem to be a violation of the MSPA?
I think that the answer would be that legislation would be necessary if that patient didn't like the way the MSPA is created. The MSPA is not an anti-discrimination statute. The MSPA is a coordination of benefits statute. It says if, you don't have to have it, but if you have private benefits from your employer, we're going to make sure that whatever those benefits are get paid first. There's no law that says you have to have this benefit, any benefit from your employer. There's no law that says that you have to have dialysis of any kind if you offer medical benefits. The law is if you have medical benefits that you voluntarily, discretionarily offer as an employer, that you can't single out Medicare eligibility factors, age, disability, or end-stage renal disease, and how you administer what your benefit plans or conditions are going to be.
But here, the hypo of Judge Murphy with blatant discrimination against end-stage renal disease, why wouldn't there be a remedy even if you're correct in the technical reading of the MSPA, why would there be a remedy under ERISA alleging discrimination under the MSPA?
So maybe I misunderstand the hypothetical. As I understood it, the hypothetical is that, well, if the hypothetical is that the plan itself calls out end-stage renal disease individuals, then you would have an ERISA claim under the anti-discrimination provisions of 29 U.S.C. 1182 that would require you to treat people similarly situated the same way. And the plan here isn't a hypothetical. This particular plan does treat everybody across all enrollees and participants the same way. All dialysis treatment is given the same exact benefit tier and treatment.
So am I understanding then that you agree that in the hypo that there could be an ERISA claim by the beneficiary, and the beneficiary here has assigned rights to payment through this assignment, there could be an ERISA claim that could be in effect raising the Medicare Secondary Payer Act requirements as part of the claim. Is that right? So then you're moving on to saying, well, your plan is not actually blatantly discriminatory as the hypo would be.
That's right. The hypothetical is not reality for what's before the court. As to the plan, it's also not before the court with respect to the assignment. You know, the assignment in this case is the assignment of benefits for payments, not for breach of fiduciary duty, not for actions outside of benefits. The facts before the court that are unchangeable from the complaint are that the plaintiff walked away from the discretionary plan offered by the employer to Medicare. So those are what the facts are. I think if the question is, well, what if everything were different? Could there hypothetically be an ERISA claim? I would have to say, I'd want to see what those facts are, but yeah, sure, maybe.
Okay, well, why isn't there an ERISA claim here?
There's no ERISA claim here because the discrimination that's alleged is under the MSPA, and it's specific to the MSPA. And the MSPA itself says you can't take into account or differentiate, but then the examples given are disparate treatment, intentionally calling someone out, not treating an entire category the same way, or anti-differentiation, where you give different benefits based on Medicare eligibility. Again, not in play the way this plan is laid out. And as Judge Murphy noted, the reg completely undercuts any arguments there at 42 CFR 411.161C.
So I get that, but what about the reg right above C? So that would be B5, where it says failure to cover routine maintenance dialysis or kidney transplants when a plan covers other dialysis services or other organ transplants. So that is not discrimination based on end-stage renal disease status. That is basically saying the plan is going to cover some transplants, but not kidney transplants. And this provision seems to suggest that that type of substantive policy decision about what the plan should cover could violate this anti-differentiation principle, even though it doesn't single out Medicare patients or end-stage renal disease. So how is that five provision consistent with your view that it's only express discrimination against those who have end-stage renal disease or can participate in Medicare? Is that what is that issue by the statute?
Yeah, again, another hypothetical that's not before the court because this actually is covered by this particular plan.
I'm using the regulation to challenge your interpretation of the statute. That regulation seems to suggest your interpretation of the statute is wrong because it suggests that not covering kidney transplants, even though it's not based on end-stage renal disease status, would violate the anti-differentiation principle.
No court has ruled this way. I haven't seen any analysis of it. My view would be that if you decide to offer any dialysis activity, that there is some minimum level of what you need to offer, and that provision says that.
You know, the entire predicate for your arguments seems to suggest that there's no way under the applicable statute and regs to take account of the financial benefits for the financial consequences for the beneficiaries of them being forced off the plan, out of the plan, because they can't afford co-pays and other fees, and into Medicare. That the underlying policy is oblivious to the financial consequences for the beneficiaries here, and there's nothing from a policy standpoint under these regs that would address that problem. What are the equities here for the beneficiaries? What would you say about the problem, the financial burden for the beneficiaries?
I guess, Your Honor, I'd come at it a couple of different ways. I mean, first I'd say the law doesn't provide any basic level of required dialysis. There is no, whether we agree with that or not, the law of the land is not you have a minimum level of dialysis that your employer has to give you. If your employer gives you some dialysis benefit coverage, the Medicare Secondary Payer Act says that has to come first. The whole point of the MSPA is to align the coordination of benefits. And so long as you're under your employer's plan and it offers that opportunity, you need to stay there. The statute is a coordination of benefits. It's not an imposition of a particular benefit or imposition of a particular level of benefit. So the equity there is that it may not seem fair in America that everyone doesn't get what they want, but there's a discrete pot of money for a self-insured group healthcare plan like Marietta Memorial. It puts in a set amount of assets, and it's a fiduciary to make sure that those assets are distributed not just with dialysis, but with cancer, heart disease, any number of other conditions. And it's allowed, it's permitted to make uniform benefits across categories to be the fiduciary to manage those assets the right way. If you look at it from not just the individual standpoint, who's not the beneficiary here? This lawsuit is about shifting money from the self-insured plan to DaVita. I would say that DaVita is a publicly traded corporation, and Your Honor could check to see what it does year to year. In 2016, it made $800 million profit on dialysis work.
Your red card is up. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's been up for a while.
Sorry, Your Honor.
If you want to sum up in a sentence or two.
For all these reasons, the district court's decision is supported and should be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Marietta's lawyer.
Good morning, Your Honors. Bill Proffitt on behalf of Marietta Memorial Employee Health Benefit Plan and Marietta Memorial Hospital. Mr. Holliday has gone in great detail about the plan. I'd like to point out one statement by Mr. Birchfield in his argument, in which he said that the plan for dialysis services reduces the fees to below that of Medicare. In our brief on page 7, it actually pegs the fees at 125% of the allowable fees for Medicare dialysis services. So as Mr. Holliday said, this is a fee dispute by DaVita trying to get more funds for the dialysis services, and the fees are greater than those for Medicare. Simply, I only have 3 minutes. I realize that there's been a lot of arguments. I'll answer questions. One thing we have to remember, though, this is there has been no harm to patient A. The facts indicate there's been no allegation that there's been no mispayment for dialysis services. He has not missed any treatment. He or she has not missed any treatment for dialysis services. There's been no delay in treatment for dialysis services.
Aren't there different consequences depending on whether one goes to a covered entity or a non-covered entity? All the dialysis entities are non-plan services, so that there would be higher co-pays and other things like that?
So are there consequences? Potentially, but everyone who receives dialysis services is in the same boat. There's no discrimination against end-stage renal disease versus others that receive that. And the plan, as Mr. Holliday said, has limited resources. It covers the services at 125% outside of network for all services, for all dialysis services. So I guess there are consequences, but that's for all dialysis services. It's not specifically to end-stage renal disease.
Right, but you cover a certain number of dialysis visits per year, right? So only end-stage people are the ones who need to have more. Is that correct?
I don't know that. There could be other, I'm a lawyer, not a doctor. There could be other conditions. There could be other individuals that also have that issue. It's not simply just the end stage renal disease as it's drafted in the plan. And with that, if there's no further questions, I see I have a minute. I will briefly summarize that for the reasons set forth in the district court opinion, as well as said by Mr. Holliday, we ask that the district court opinion be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. To begin where you left off, Judge Moore, ESRD, as alleged in the complaint, which is taken as true, and I'm confident discovery would show this, ESRD patients need dialysis treatments 3 times a week for the rest of their lives. They are the only category of dialysis patients that fit into that situation, and therefore they are very different from the normal acute kidney injury patient that might need dialysis. Second point, let's go back to this private action issue. Our position is that the clear terms of the statute indicate that no government payment is necessary to bring the private action, whereas in the adjacent provision, a government payment is essential for the government to bring an action. That difference in the statute must mean something. We believe that you can reconcile the biomedical decision to that for the reasons we've given, that the biomedical language is not binding dicta on this panel. And also because the will be for Congress to include a reference to a provision that prohibited payments if it were requiring a payment in the private action. But if the court were to decide that the private action under MSPA does not exist, then you would need to reverse the district court on count two, because the reason the district court dismissed that was because she held that there was no discrimination in violation of the MSPA. We've alleged there is discrimination under the MSPA. The district court held the assignment is limited to benefits, which is what count two seeks. So we would have an ERISA claim under count two, even if there was no private action under the MSPA. Next point, Your Honor. Judge Murphy asked about the provision of services. I would refer the court to the required provision of dialysis services. I would refer the court to 54 Fed Register at 41718 in 1989 when it implemented these regulations. And the court said in that provision, quote, when a plan fails to comply with the law, it is the provider's responsibility to pursue collection from the plan. In 56 Fed Reg at 1202 in 1991, the CMS said, a group health plan that does not cover routine maintenance dialysis or kidney transplants would be in violation of the anti-differentiation provision. So the effort to include a few acute kidney injury patients in their discrimination, in their broad discrimination of dialysis, doesn't save them here. As we have argued, if the plan were to discriminate against sickle cell anemia, it would clearly be indicated to discriminate against African Americans who are most likely affected. Same here, because ESRD patients are closely associated with the need for dialysis. There is discrimination here. Final point, Your Honor. The anti-differentiation provision has three categories of differentiation. It has on the basis of ESRD, on the basis of the need for renal dialysis, and on any other basis. And Your Honor, we've alleged, and they've never responded, that this is a discrimination plainly on the basis of renal dialysis. They have discriminated against all people who need renal dialysis. It is a clear violation of statute in our view. And then the on any other basis, we believe incorporates the disparate impact analysis as the inclusive communities decision of the Supreme Court states. So if there are no questions, I will conclude.
Thank you. I think we're all set. We appreciate the argument from each of you, and the case will be submitted.